Welcome to the 59th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist living in Southwest Florida, as well as an endurance athlete. Welcome to the Christmas edition. Today, my guest is someone a little bit out of the ordinary, but she fits in very good for this time of year. She's a vegan baker. And her name is Paravana Kavanfar. And I actually met her husband at the Sacramento Farmers Market when we were out there running the marathon. Usually we kind of, walk around and see the sights the day before the marathon a little bit. And we always kind of like to run into some natural markets or some we've been lucky to actually run into some farmers markets. And so we saw this farmers market and went up to it, and the produce was just gorgeous, anything you could think of. And the fruits and vegetables were all so fresh, and it was a crisp morning, and it was just perfect. And we happened to look down, and there was a table that they were selling baked goods. And usually when you're, you go and you see the baked goods, they're always traditional standard American baked goods with butter and milk products and eggs. And so I saw at first, I saw the gluten-free, and it's like, do you don't have any vegan pastries, do you? And I had missed it completely. And basically it was, they were all vegan and gluten-free. So I started, we started chatting, and we sampled the persimmon pie, and there was a chocolate pie and an apple crumble and a rum cake. So we got those to go and ate them over the rest of our trip with coffee, and they were very, very delicious, and they were all made with simple ingredients, no oil, no eggs, no butter, no dairy, of course, and the ingredients were listed on the back, and they were packaged very nicely. And they were from a place called Butterfly Vegan Bakery. And there's an online website. And Kavanfar is the, she's the baker. And her husband works the farmer's market in Sacramento. They also do a farmer's market in Davis and a couple other places. And she also has an online business. He also has a coffee business where at the Davis Farmers Market, so you'll hear all about it. I thought it was particularly timely in that the Christmas time is a time for baking and sweets and parties, and when I'm talking usually about a whole foods plant-based diet, people think that that's the end of eating dessert. And it's certainly not true, but we like to sort of eliminate oil, obviously, from the diet and the traditional dairy and butter, but also we like to limit the sugar. And so she gives great alternatives by using fruit purees, and then, of course, she uses nuts and flaxseed. And she makes all these wonderful vegan pastries. So I hope you enjoy the interview. In my house, especially my grandmother, my Irish grandmother, always started baking right after Thanksgiving. And she would bake different kind of cookies every evening. And she stored them in tins in her upstairs in what we called the back room, and it was an unheated room up north, so it was very cold, and it was probably about 50 degrees back there. So she had all these big tins of different kinds of cookies that we would sample, and then she had them, we had our main Christmas dinner and Christmas Eve party there, and she had all these cookies, and she gave them away to different people. She would make plates of cookies. So there was always cookies to sample, but they were pretty high fat and certainly high sugar treats. But after she passed, I kind of took it upon myself to follow in her footsteps and do baking at Christmas time. And it's kind of been a little bit of a joke at my house over the years because I didn't bake much only at Christmas time. So along with everything that's going on in the world of medicine and hospitals and everything else and shopping, I would opt to become a baker at Christmas time. And of course, I wouldn't start after Thanksgiving. I would start probably the week before Christmas. And I would try to make all these traditional cookies that I never, you know, that I made once a year. And in Florida, if you've ever been down here, the humidity can be kind of difficult with baking and on and on and on. So I would be tired and bake at night. And so there were a lot of disasters that happened in my Christmas baking. But I, you know, kept the tradition alive and have passed it down to my daughter, who now likes to bake at Christmas as well. But when we became vegan, we, you know, decided to veganize the recipes that we liked. But we veganized them at first with, you know, we kept the sugar and we went to vegan butter. And that wasn't, you know, very healthy either. So as we've refined our diet, we're trying to do more recipes that are, you know, made with either maple syrups or dates and nuts, and try to get away from the oils as much as possible. So, you know, certainly Butterfly Vegan Bakery is, you know, she's perfected it. So I, you know, I still need to do some perfecting as far as my baking goes, but it was a real treat to taste her goods. I definitely will try to find her again next year when we go back to Sacramento. And, you know, I'd encourage, she does online sales, as you know, and she even mails to Florida. So it would be great to, I think I'll probably order some things from her as well. So I hope you enjoy, you know, hearing from her. And it was, you know, it makes the world very small when you run into people like this and strike up a conversation. And again, being plant-based and vegan, I have run into so many nice peoples from, you know, all over. And it's so easy to get a conversation started, and they're so happy to share their information and share their knowledge. It's just a very positive community. So if you're out there and just starting your vegan journey, don't be afraid to ask people, because they're more than happy to share, you know, vegan recipes. And, you know, there's some trials to, you know, switching over. So what works best, you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. So one tidbit that I'll tell you right now that she's going to tell you is that, you know, the use of arrowroot as a thickener versus cornstarch and flaxseed is the other one, you know, instead of eggs or and fruit purees. So, you know, don't be afraid to experiment a little bit out there. You know, hopefully it won't wait till, you know, a couple days from before Christmas to try your first experiment. But if you do, I can guarantee that using the natural ingredients tastes good. It's very sweet. And maybe even if it's not the initial consistency that you would like it to become, ultimately, it's still really good. So if you have to eat it with a spoon, it'll still taste good. I did get a question this before we get started this week from a listener who had high cholesterol, and he asked me what heart test he should get to see how bad his heart disease is, because he figures he has high cholesterol, he must have heart disease. And certainly, if you have high blood pressure, you have vascular disease. And if you have any other symptoms of cramping in your legs when you walk or chest pain when you walk, you have vascular disease. Or if you've had a stroke, you know, you have vascular disease. And if you've had high cholesterol for a long time, you probably have plaque in your arteries. So the question is, how do you find out how bad it is and what to do about it? And one of the main things that I learned in medical school that still holds true is that you have to ask, what are you going to do with the information that you get from the test? And is the risk of the test worth the benefits that you get from finding out what answer you achieved? So if you're not going to do anything with the test results, then there's no reason to do the test in the first place. But if you're if your risk is fairly low and you do a test that's high risk, then you may be putting yourself at undue risk just to find out something that really is not going to be changed. And if the end result, you're going to adopt a whole foods plant-based diet and you're going to get healthy in the first place, then subjecting yourself to a lot of risk may be not warranted. So one of the first things, you know, this, I guess maybe try the simplest thing that you could possibly do is to have an ultrasound. And a lot of times we have ultrasound people's carotids to see if there are any plaque there. But a lot of times those are reported out as far as the percent of flow obstruction, not necessarily how much plaque there is in the artery, because it's somewhat difficult to tell. So if the interpreting physician is not commenting on the plaque itself, but just looking on whether something's really bad blocked, you may not get an accurate answer as far as is there disease or not. And the same way with a stress test. If we do a regular treadmill exercise test on people and they walk on a treadmill and we see what their heart rate and their blood pressure and EKG looks like as the treadmill progresses, and usually what happens, you start slow and every 3 minutes it gets you go up a little bit more of an incline and the speed gets a little faster. And depending on how far you walk and how high your heart rate goes, how quickly, we can determine in what good and how good a shape that you're in. So a lot of times people say, well, they flunked the stress test, but there's really no flunking as far as being able to exercise, because we get information. So if you can exercise only 3 minutes, then that's the equivalent of, say, making your bed as far as your ability to exert yourself. But if you can exercise 10 minutes on what we call a Bruce protocol on a treadmill, then that's the equivalent of shoveling snow. So we know if people can walk on a treadmill for 10 minutes, then their ability to do pretty heavy exertion is safe, and their prognosis is good. So that gives us some information. The other thing is, if their blood pressure goes exceedingly high, then most likely they have high blood pressure when they're doing those kind of chores around the house, and that's a risk. There's a nuclear portion that you can add on to the stress test to try to identify whether there are blockages, which looks at the blood flow of the heart through a nuclear tracer. But again, it won't be abnormal unless there's a blockage greater than 70-80%. So those blockages might not be the most dangerous ones. Those kind of creep up on people way over the years and may not be causing much in the way of symptoms, or may not be a risk for, you know, things like death or something worse, or a heart attack. It's more sometimes of the blockages that are only 20%, and those soft plaques that are, which can rupture and become 100% overnight. And those are the ones that we can't test for. So you can have a normal stress test, but then have a heart attack the next day. So it's not completely predictive. On the other hand, if you have chest pain when you exert yourself, and then we do a stress test, we can kind of tell where and how severe it is by how far you can exercise and how much of the heart's involved. Then the question would be what you would do with that answer. You know, so if it were significantly abnormal, then the next step would be a heart catheterization, which is a dye test where it's an invasive test where we go up with a catheter inside the blood vessels to the heart to look at those arteries directly with contrast. But before we would do that, the other thing you have to worry about with the stress test is it falsely abnormal, because if you don't have symptoms, sometimes different things can interfere with shadowing and various other artifacts that can make it look abnormal when it's not, and then you're ultimately subjected to a heart catheterization, which does carry a fair amount of risk. And the traditional risk is 1% chance of stroke, heart attack, or death. So if you're an asymptomatic person, taking a 1% risk of stroke, heart attack, or death is not really such a great idea. Especially if it could be, you know, a minimally false, you know, a falsely positive stress test. So, you know, that's what we like to see people in the office and talk to them and get their symptoms before we decide whether or not people should have a certain kind of test. The other test that's non-invasive is a CAT scan to look at the calcification of blood vessels. And if you have heavily calcified blood vessels, then there's a pretty good risk that you have significant blockages. However, the calcified blockages may not be the one that's going to hurt you. So again, it may lead to an unnecessary test. It certainly exposes you to radiation. It certainly can expose you to contrast that can be hard on your kidneys. So the test is not completely without risk. And you can have a normal calcium score but still have significant blockages, because those plaques that can be 20 to 50% could be not calcified, but again, cause you immediate problems when those plaques crack. So the short and the long answer is it depends on what you're looking for and you know, what you hope to accomplish through the test. Sometimes I think it's a good idea to do the stress test so that we can define people's risk if they have multiple risk factors. But again, what we do with that answer depends entirely upon the person. If people are willing to adopt a whole food plant-based diet, they can significantly improve their risk, and you can compare those things from 1 year to the next and see improvement. So I hope that helped out a little bit. But as far as, you know, yearly testing for people that don't have any symptoms or risk, just because they're 65, there's you do stand a chance of getting an abnormal test, and then you have to decide what you want to do with the abnormal test. But it, you know, a regular treadmill test, again, can give you a lot of information without having much in the way of risk. So you'll have to, as they say on TV, talk to your doctor. But as a part of a general physical, everybody doesn't need all those tests every year, that's for sure. So without further ado, I think we'll go on with the interview with Parvana Kevonfar, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Parvana Kevonfar. Parvana, I haven't actually met in person, but I met her husband at the Sacramento Vegan, or the Sacramento Farmers Market. My boyfriend and I were there to run the Sacramento Marathon, and we were taking a walk the morning before the marathon, and we happened upon the farmers market, and we started down the aisles, and we're always looking for fresh vegetables to kind of take back to the room and have before the marathon. So we looked down and we saw these treats, and usually, you know, you look at the treats and they're usually standard American, full of butter, full of dairy type of treats. But we looked, and the first thing we saw was gluten, and it was kind of funny because I asked your husband, I was like, oh, he said, they're gluten-free, and it's like, oh, yeah, but do they have dairy? And he's like, no, they're vegan. Of course, it said right on it, but I wasn't paying attention. So when we saw that, we got all excited. And so we ended up getting a persimmon pie and an apple, I think it was an apple tart, and then there was a chocolate pie, and we got a rum cake. And so over the next couple of days, we enjoyed those treats. So welcome, Parvana.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you enjoyed my treats.
Yeah, it was, you know, California, we live in Florida. And, you know, California, you can almost always find vegan things. And we love to happen upon farmers markets. And the produce there was just fantastic. Awesome. But so tell me, how did you get into making vegan treats? How long have you been vegan?
It's over 13 years, actually. And so my idea of becoming vegan and changing my diet is actually different from typical vegan, because my concern and my reason I switched to this diet was entirely health. I wanted to eat healthier food, and so like something around 15 years ago, I started a diet that was full of vegetables and had only a little bit of meat. And so I followed that diet for like 3 or 4 months, and you can't believe how happy I was. I had so much energy. I just could fly. I was so, so excited and so happy that I found this. And I grew up in a culture that meat is like the very first ingredients of every single Persian dish. And so the whole cuisine is taken over, you know, by meat. And if you don't eat meat in Iran, people go like, are you sick or are you mad, you know? Uh-huh. You don't eat kebab or, you know, any typical, you know, meat popular, you know, Persian dishes. So, and I had so much troubles, and with my family, with my friends, they kept giving me a hard time because they thought that I'm going to die, you know, sooner or later because I don't eat meat. And my husband and I were pen pals for 4 or 5 years. I was in Iran and Alex was in the U.S. and we were like exchanging emails because Alex was learning Farsi and I was learning English. And after 4 years, we fell in love and we decided to marry. And I finally came to the U.S. in 2011. And before that, I didn't touch any baking or any cooking, zero. I hated just being in the kitchen because I thought that the only dish that you could make is Iranian, dishes that I didn't like. And so I came to Davis in California, and I was so thrilled, and I was on the moon because I saw all these, you know, alternatives. I didn't know anything about tofu. I didn't know anything about, anything besides, you know, sugar. I found out, oh my gosh, there are healthier, you know, sugar alternatives. And so, and for a long time, I was desperate to eat desserts because all the desserts in Iran are full of oil and white sugar. And I thought that that's it. You know, you can't make anything better than this, anything healthier. And I got into baking and vegan baking so much that I just kept baking and baking like 8 hours a day, or just every day coming up with one recipe and invite friends and ask them to try. And so and I didn't mention that I studied business in Iran, and I had this dream of starting my own business. And so, well, everything worked out together after I think it was like 2 years after I came to the U.S., I realized that I can start a cottage food operation. And so I took that opportunity, and so I started my baking business 2 years ago. And so, yeah, and just at first it was just like one local farmer's market it was a craft fair, and it's still going on in Davis. And so it's called Square Tomatoes. And so I was doing that once a month, and then I got into Davis Food Co-op, and I'm still selling a lot of my stuff at that little nice, lovely store that both my husband and I used to work. And like around a year ago, less than that, I found out about Midtown Sacramento Farmers Market. And so we started selling at that great market, and now it's one of the best markets I'm doing right now. And so, and just like keep growing, you know, started an online shop. Now I ship from Davis to all around the U.S. and I have a lot of customers in Florida.
Wow.
From Davis to Alaska, New York, Florida, Texas, and all around the country.
That's fantastic. Well, I said that your ingredients are listed on your labels, and they're pretty simple and pretty few ingredients.
Yes.
So you try to keep pretty natural.
Yeah. That's actually my thing and my goal, because I realized that traditional treats can be made so easily, much healthier. And and if you don't tell people that this is the healthier or that the healthier version that doesn't have white sugar or oil or, you know, butter, and try it, and if they try it they are amazed that how is this possible? You said that it's low carb, low calorie, low fat, low sugar, and no white sugar. And I'm like, yes, yeah, believe me, you know. So that's why I started this business, because I was so amazed of how healthy desserts are tasty. And I wanted to show everyone that, hey, you know, you don't have to eat so much oil and butter to enjoy your desserts. See, this is a much healthier one, and it's still delicious and still tasty. So yeah, I entirely cut white sugar, only use either dates, maple syrup, coconut sugar, and no fat and no butter oil is in my products. So entirely use nuts and also fruits, fresh fruits, to keep the texture moist and still healthy. Another thing that I started, and you mentioned about those little, you know, mini pies and tarts, is using the fresh local farm to table, I don't know, fruits. I got started working closely, with local farmers, and to get fresh organic fruits from them, and make those little crumble cups or mini pies, and just the fruits, the seasonal fruits. We started with peach and blackberry, super successful. And I switched to pear and apple, and now it's persimmon. So, yeah, and I'm going to continue with strawberry, rhubarb, and then just like, again, when it's summer hits, blackberry and peach again. So, yeah, I'm trying to make them as healthy as possible.
You know, it's funny, where I grew up, I had never tasted a persimmon, actually, until last year. And when I tasted them, I fell in love with them. And that pie was just wonderful that you made.
Oh, thank you.
So it was really, really good. And, you know, I noticed at the farmer's market, the persimmons were just the gorgeous there. So it was the perfect, I guess, their perfect season for them.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had a pumpkin pie, too, earlier, I believe.
Yes. And I was so proud that I was the only gluten-free and vegan pumpkin pie provider for or supplier at Davis Food Co-op. And, yeah, we sold a lot of them in Thanksgiving and before Thanksgiving. Yes, I still sell them. I'm probably going to sell, like, a little after New Year, but it's out of season. So, but, yeah, we did sell a lot of vegan, gluten-free pumpkin pie this season.
So what do you mix the, like, you know, traditionally if people were to make a pumpkin pie, you know, they would mix canned milk and the pumpkin and eggs. To make a vegan pie, I would do pumpkin and tofu. What do you do for that filling?
Oh, since all my products are soy free, so I don't use any soy products in my baked goods. What I do is I use starch, and actually healthy starch, not cornstarch or not tapioca or the things that I realize my customers don't like. I use this plant arrowroot.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
So the arrowroots, the root of that plant that is powdered and do the same thing. And since my gluten-free products are also paleo, and that actually, that's why I picked that, thickener ingredient instead of typical, normal starch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted all my gluten-free products are paleo-friendly or paleo, as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the rest is So it's that mostly, and then the pumpkin and the coconut sugar, and the other one that is the condensed milk that is the one of the very ingredients in traditional classic pumpkin pie is what I make actually myself. It's a secret ingredient. I make it myself, and it's a combination of nuts that is diluted with almond milk. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I make my my pumpkin pie filling.
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of a thickened nut milk of sorts.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that does the same thing that the condensed milk does in classic pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. So, did you bake in Iran? Were you did you like cooking, or was this something, you know, just driven out of you were vegan and you wanted some treats?
Yes, I was vegan. I was always interested and in treats and healthy treats, but there was none back in my country. So, and when I got here, I found out that, you know, I could make easily, like the dessert that I was always like drooling for and, you know, waiting for and looking forward to. And so, yeah, I was so amazed and excited of, you know, finding a way to finally baking the dessert I love, you know, always love, and I couldn't make, you know, in Iran.
What are some of the things you're making now for the holidays?
Well, for Thanksgiving, we had that pumpkin pie and also mini pumpkin pie and pumpkin pie bites. And all my gluten-free products are made with coconut flour, which is grain-free, and it's really good for celiac or the people who are super sensitive with gluten. And for Christmas we had that rum cake, and I was able to introduce the persimmon pie too, and also the macarons, which is also kind of like a you know, Christmassy type of cookies, and we had that one for these two for Christmas. We also have this walnut jam cookies. It's like a it's a little round cookies with a raspberry jam in the middle. So we had that one, and I think a couple of farmers markets brought Mexican chocolate snickerdoodle and also grapefruit chocolate cookies.
That's interesting.
Yeah, both were really successful, especially grapefruit chocolate. Yeah.
So, where does the grapefruit go into that?
Oh, it's got grapefruit juice and a lot of grapefruit zest, and that makes it super grapefruity.
And so, then you have the coconut flour with those?
Yes, I have actually both version, regular and gluten free. So mm-hmm. The gluten free version, yeah, it does have coconut flour.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
Thank you.
Have you veganized any of your traditional Iranian sweets recipes?
Well, to be honest, no, because. It's just because I'm not interested in, you know, traditional Iranian sweets. So I guess that's why I haven't given it a try. But I do love to use the spices, mm-hmm. like cardamom, like orange blossom water, like rose water. And I have one cookie that is the oatmeal raisin cookie with Persian raisin and cardamom and saffron and orange blossom water. And so I love to use saffron. I love saffron. So I do use the spices, the kind of Persian, you know, spices that are common in baked goods. Uh-huh. But I haven't veganized any of the classic Persian desserts.
So it sounds like things are really taking off. So I guess, you know, do you envision yourself going commercial at some point?
Oh, pardon me? What did you ask?
Well, I said, it sounds like your business is really taking off. I said, do you envision yourself going into some sort of a commercial production at some point? Or you like the local kind of small venues?
Well, I do like to grow that big. That as long as my quality, I mean, the quality of my, you know, baked goods will be, you know, secured. But I'll definitely grow as big as, you know, the quality, because it's really important for me that people taste the different, the difference. And yeah, as long as my quality is the same, I would like to go in bigger scale. And but my husband and I, because my husband, I don't know if he told you that he started a mobile coffee business, and so we do in fact a couple of farmers markets in Davis together. He sells coffee in his bike trailer with espresso machine, and I sell my baked goods next to him. We're looking forward to opening our own cafe sometime in future, and so serving coffee and baked goods, and so we'll definitely do that. And but I do like to have a bigger kitchen to be able to supply, you know, more cookies and sell at larger stores like Whole Foods or Nugget. And so that's my next step. Yeah, this is my goal.
That sounds great. So when you were coming to the United States, did you envision this would be your business?
Not this one, to be honest, but I had this dream of starting my own business. I wanted to actually start a business of introducing Persian drinks, Persian traditional drinks to the U.S. market. And but doing that, I needed a real commercial kitchen. I can't do that and cottage food operation. So, I had the vision of starting a drink business, not baking business.
It's amazing how things work out, right?
I know, exactly.
So that would have been in competition with your husband's coffee business, and it wouldn't have worked. But this, the pastries are a perfect combination.
Exactly, exactly.
So do you all have any children?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not going to have.
No children. So, and he's vegan too, I presume?
Yes. Yeah. He's mostly like, he's mostly vegan. But if, you know, if someone gives him a cookie that has, you know, egg, so he eats it. But he's, you can say, 90% vegan.
Sounds good. So he's not quite as particular.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good. Well, I mean, I wish you guys all the best luck. I think we'll be in Sacramento again next year for the marathon. So I certainly hope that he's there. Otherwise, we'll have to track you down in Davis to the farmer's market. And Davis is how far from Sacramento?
It's like 40 minutes, something like that, you know. Yeah, 40. Yeah, 30 minutes to 40, you know. It's not that far at all.
Do you have much business up further north in the Napa area? You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, around Berkeley and San Francisco, there's a lot of vegan restaurants. But when you get up into Napa, not so much.
Wow, I didn't know that.
No, I mean, there's, you know, there was, we were, because we left Sacramento, went up to Napa, and the restaurants, you know, they're familiar with vegan, and most of the time they would make us something, But there wasn't really any vegan restaurants, and there weren't any, you know, it wasn't like a lot of options on the menu. They, you know, a couple places we went that, you know, were really nice. Like, oh, we'll make you a plate, you know, so it was something off the menu as opposed to on the menu. So, you know, yeah. You might check, you might, hopefully you'll progress up into that area because.
Yeah.
It seemed like it's, you know, there's a lot of organic and every, you know, everybody wants farm to table, but there, you know, like I said, it's not a lot of vegan options.
Wow. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you
should
have
definitely check it out.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's, you know, it's like the wine and cheese thing, you know, whether so people are, you know, stay away, they still want their cheese yet or not, but, you know, hopefully it'll advance up there. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, good, good. Well, I'll make sure that I put all your website online, and so people can get in contact with you. You've succeeded in making me hungry for dessert now. You know, we were talking, you know, before we started. I, you know, grew up. I had an Irish grandmother, and I had an Italian grandmother, and both of them made a lot of cookies around the holidays and sweets, but they were, you know, very unhealthy. And, you know, it's one thing I tried to keep that tradition going, but as I became vegan and I'd go to start to make this, and even, you know, you can veganize them with vegan butter and white sugar, but it's still very unhealthy. So I'd start to look at these things, and it was funny over the, when I first went vegan. And we made things, you know, with vegan butter or whatever early on. And I always got, like, really bad indigestion at Christmas time because I was eating so many cookies with so much oil.
Oh, no.
And, you know, so it wasn't until I got rid of oil that I, you know, I got rid of the stomach issues. And so now I look at it, it's like I don't really want to be a part of that. But it's, you know, there are some tricks to the trade as far as getting things to stick together and getting things to rise. And
absolutely.
Do you, you know, do you use flaxseed? I know you use the nuts for your crust and things. Do you use flaxseed?
Yes. Yeah. Flaxseed. Yes. Yeah. In many of my products, I do use flaxseed. Yes.
And how about the energy, you know, like kind of a process and egg replacer? Do you use any of that, or you stick mostly with more natural things?
Just natural things. No, I don't. Yeah, I don't use anything, you know, kind of like, you know, weird. Or even my gluten-free products, I don't use, xanthan gum, you know, that many of the gluten-free, you know, products have. I refuse to use that. I try really hard to find another way to stick everything together in my gluten-free products.
Do you use applesauce or prunes in some of the things?
Yes, absolutely. Lots of fruit purees. Yeah, from apple to pumpkin, some persimmon even. If there's anything, you know, in season and I can, you know, get a lot and, you know, make, I usually like just cook them and puree them and use them in my recipes. Like in that apple tart or apple crisp, we call them apple crumble cup, and that you tried. So that one has got a lot of, you know, apple puree and pear, actually apple and pear, that I make my own sauce. And it's just entirely fruit, but it gives the all the fruits, you know, flavors, vitamins, and also makes it really, really tasty.
Yeah, so. It was. I vouch for that. Yeah, that's good. You know, and I think that's, you know, that's when people find that out, that they can use those substitutions. You know, they think, you have to have eggs, or you have to have milk, or you have to have butter. And once you find the difference, I mean, they taste so much better without those things. And again, you know, they're so much healthier. And so you're having some sweets, but you're not having all the unhealthy side effects of the sweets. So it's actually a nutrient-dense sweet. So very, very good.
That's right.
Well, you
That's
know,
right.
I kind of believe everything happens for a reason. So I think, you know, we stumbled upon the farmer's market for a reason, and it just worked out great to be able to talk to you at the holidays. And so hopefully when people are making their Christmas cookies, they can maybe think of a little healthier way, because a lot of my patients, they'll kind of, we say, fall off the wagon, or, you know, when their family comes to town, they start cooking like they used to cook because they want to make sure their families have traditional foods. But if they found out that they could make their traditional foods healthy, then that's all the more better.
Yeah, sure. I would like to include a couple of things. First, so my Twitter actually account is butterfly underline vegan. So if they want to, listeners want to look that up. But Butterfly Vegan Bakery is my account and Instagram. And also, just to say thank you, I made this coupon code for the listener of this podcast.
Oh, nice.
And it's $5 off on their first order if they order online on my website or on my Etsy shop, which is Butterfly Desserts. So they can use that. They can use this coupon, and it's PBW. They just need to, actually put that PBW, okay, and they will get $5 off on their first order.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you so very much. It's been a pleasure to meet you. And just the butterfly came from where?
What's that? Sorry.
And butterfly, how did you come to the butterfly bakery again?
Oh, it's actually my name. My name is Parvane, and Parvane in English means butterfly. So that's why I picked this name for my business.
Very, very, very good. Well, Parvane, I certainly appreciate you taking time to speak with me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
And hopefully you'll be working overtime after this.
Oh, actually, to be honest, I was in the middle of, you know, making cookies and pies, but I'm so happy that I got to talk to you. And for my special thank to you, actually, I would like to send you one of your favorite desserts, and because what you did, it means a lot to me. So that's just a little thank you. I don't know. Christmas present.
Well, thank you so much. I'll look forward to, I'll send you my address on the email.
Sure. And what's your favorite one? I mean, the ones that you've tried or you haven't tried, I don't know.
Well, certainly that persimmon pie was special.
Oh, really? Great.
Yeah, that's great. My, yes, that's my favorite. Yes. So everybody out there, order persimmon pie, but get them soon because persimmon season is almost over, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta be quick. All right, so then I'll look up my emails and waiting for your address, and I'll be more than happy to send you persimmon pie, and just to say thank you.
All right. Well, happy and healthy New Year to you and your husband, Parvane.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Good
to
night.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Parvane Cavenfar. Again, she can be found on Facebook at Butterfly Vegan Bakery. She's on Twitter at butterfly_vegan. She's on Instagram at Butterfly Vegan Bakery. And she's also Butterfly Desserts is her website. You can also find her. And if you go to her website, butterflyveganbakery.com, there's a coupon code, and that's P as in Paul, B as in boy, W as in Willis, and you get $5 off your first order. So I would encourage you to give that a try. The desserts are wonderful. There's, you know, very limited ingredients, and like she said, they're all fruit. They're gluten-free. you know, all natural sweeteners. So it's a really good deal, especially for, too bad I didn't have her on a couple of weeks so you could order them for Christmas, but there's always time for New Year's, especially if you live fairly close. And if you have an opportunity, go to the Sacramento Farmers Market or the Davis Farmers Market or any farmers market for that. They're always, you always find neat things and meet interesting people. And hopefully she'll work her way up towards Napa. It's one of my favorite places in the whole wide world, so hopefully they'll get some more vegan treats up that way. I want to also remind you that you can contact me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com, and Jamie spelled jamiedulaney@gmail.com if you have any questions or concerns. I love a positive rating on iTunes. A 5-star would be wonderful. I also, if you're last minute, but tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Unity Church of Peace in Port Charlotte, Florida, Dr. Brooke Goldner will be here to speak and do some book signings and have her book. And then January 23rd is our Charlotte County First Annual Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. And it's First Annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference, and you can find that on Eventbrite, eventbrite.com, and search First Annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Foodies and get your tickets. They're going fast. There'll be a great Christmas present for someone. Dr. Esselstyn and his wife will be speaking. We'll have Evelise Capo and Dustin Rudolph and myself, and then a panel discussion. There'll be a breakfast and lunch provided, which is going to be a whole food, no added oil, vegan dining. It'll be at the Isles Yacht Club in Punta Gorda, so it's a beautiful area on the water, and a lot of fun, exciting, positive people will be there, and I hope it's the first of many, so come and support this effort to get the word out about being whole foods and plant-based, and you know, you can, your body can heal if you give it the opportunity. So I wish all those people celebrating Christmas a very Merry Christmas. I hope that you've done some plant-based holiday baking. We did. Some of ours does have some sugar in it this year, so I'm going to go more towards the fruit base next year. But we did make an oatmeal cookie from the Engine 2 Diet website. That was it was sweetened with bananas and a little bit of maple syrup. I did a lemon cookie. We did a shortbread cookie that also had bananas in there. And it had applesauce as a thickener. So, you know, no eggs in any of our pastries. And we'll be doing a cake that, again, we usually make with applesauce as a binder. So it can be done. And so I wish you all a very merry and healthy Christmas. And hopefully I'll get one off before the new year. So if I don't, then happy new year. But if I do, then I'll see you before to celebrate. Maybe I can give you some updates on how our talk with Dr. Goldner went. So until then, be safe, be healthy, and eat plant-based.